any means necessary. That's our motto. The purpose of our organization is to start right here in Harlem, which has the largest concentration of people of African descent that exists anywhere on this earth. There are more Africans here in Harlem than exist in any city on the African continent, because that's what you and I are, Africans. The Charter of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights are the principles in which we believe, and that these documents, if put into practice, represent the essence of mankind's hopes and good intentions, desirous that all Afro-American people and organizations should henceforth unite so that the welfare and well-being of our people will be assured, we are resolved to reinforce the common bond of purpose between our people by submerging all of our differences and establishing non-sectarian constructive programs for human rights. We hereby present this charter, number one, the establishment. The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what it is saying, instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom in the Irish neighborhood or the Jewish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. That's a drag. Number two, self-defense. Since self-preservation is the first law of nature, we assert the Afro-American's right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
That was Malcolm X speaking in 1964. He would be assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom on February 21st, 1965. Today, if he had lived, he would have been 90 years old. That does it for our broadcast. We have video production fellowships. Also, happy birthday to Samin Farkandeh. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard. Your Concert Billboard for Thursday, May 14th. Caroline Doctorow and Fred Raimondo will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 7:30. The New Master Sounds will be at the Brooklyn Bowl at 8. Synchro Sang will be at Barbecue in Patchahawk. The Rysdales will be at the Jalopy Theater in Brooklyn, 9 p.m. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Friday, May 15th. John Kelvin will be at the Purple Elephant in Northport, 7:30. Hopefully Forgiven will be at the Stephen Talk House in Amagansett at 8. Crosby, Stills, and Nash will be at King's Theater in Brooklyn, 8 p.m. Butcher's Blind, Brian Gallo, Cody Joe Hodges, and more will be at Swallow East in Montauk, beginning at 8. Dave Christian will be at the Corner Galley in Massapequa, 8:30. The Lone Sharks Trio will be at Shandon Court, East Islip at 9. Black and Sparrow will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 9:30. Your WUSB concert billboard for Saturday, May 16th. The new Master Sounds will be at the Brooklyn Bowl, 2 p.m. Liquid Phase, Old Squaw, Mick Hargreaves and the King Guys, all at Swallow East in Montauk, beginning 8 p.m. The Bob Dylan Birthday Tribute with the Kennedys, Rod McDonald, Russ Seeger, and more at the University Cafe, right here, Stony Brook University, 8 p.m. Easy Cheap will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport at 10.
This is Mary Lamont, host of Down Home Country here on WUSB Stony Brook. This has been your WUSB Concert Billboard Announcements. Please check the online version at WUSB.fm.
Thanks for that. Okay, this is indeed WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you this lovely, lovely Tuesday evening from this lovely campus, Stony Brook University here, which is a lovely campus. Hey, it's 6:03, and on Tuesdays at 6, we bring this really interesting show off the wall to you and to everyone. I hope your Tuesday is going really well. Here comes Off the Wall. Thanks for listening. Thank you. Okay, good evening. Hey, you're listening to Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined, as usual, and with pleasure, by Emmanuel.
Hello.
Hey, you're there.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm over on the other side of the room, and things seem to be working fine. Everything's nice today, you know? The temperature is fine. It's good outside. It's good inside. The only bad thing is, well, apparently this is finals week at Stony Brook. I mean, it is fine. It's not apparent. It definitely is. And people are starting to move out. You see all these cars, people packing up, and parents are here, and families, and the coffee shop down the hall is running out of everything. I don't understand. They don't stock up, but they're out of they're out of cups. They're out of coffee. They're out of all sorts of things. It's like the war is about to begin, and everyone's stocking up. We saw people walking out of there with shopping bags filled with things. Like, you know, they're raiding the cupboards.
I believe the term is fire sale. It was a real. I think everything was going like hotcakes. It was pretty crazy.
Hotcakes don't go as well as you might think, but they're going. Things are going. They're almost gone, and we had to pretty much fight to get what we got. So, I don't know. You know, next week, I guess it won't even be there at all.
Well, it's the ebb and flow of matriculation and university life, and that's cool.
Yeah, so it's ebbing on over, on out of here anyway. The tide is ebbing? Ebbing is going out or going in? Ebbing is going out, right?
I think you can ebb... I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You can ebb both ways.
We intend to spend more time on the water, because did you know Long Island is surrounded by water? This is interesting. The North Shore is one body of water. The South Shore is a different body of water. I mean, it's connected. It's all water, and all water everywhere is connected. We know that. But Long Island is a particularly nautical type of an area, and we spend a lot of time on land. Sometimes we might not even notice that there is water around us. Having noticed that, we have vowed to become more involved in water things.
Supposedly, you can even venture into the water. I'm not sure if we're ready for that, but it's definitely...
Slow down, cowboy. Come on.
I know, we just
found the water. Now you want to go into the water. It's like things are moving way too fast.
Way fast. Oh, gosh. No. It's beautiful out. It's the season. It's... And it's becoming fantastic weather, and you can't ignore it. It's all around you. It's a great way to stay cool for millennia and ages, I'm sure.
Oh, we had a good rainstorm last night, California. We had a great rainstorm.
Yeah, rub it in.
We were just rolling around in the water over here. Yeah, it was something else. But that's the cool thing. It literally cooled things off, and now it's nice again, and perfect weather to go outside and do all kinds of cool things, like explore the landscape.
And have adventures.
Have adventures.
I was going to add, have adventures.
Yes. So, you know, having water around to explore and, you know, I realize now, there are so many parts of the country, so many parts of the world where what we take for granted here is just simply not reality. You know, you could be landlocked someplace. Most people probably are. You don't have beaches, you don't have waves, maybe you don't even have a lake or a river or something, you know? It's something to consider when you see this around you every day.
Yeah, I really appreciate all the different habitats and how they all interface.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in the Northwest, I really was exposed to that. I mean, I have a really good sense of it, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, going from like deserts and rainforests, uh-huh, all those kinds of great places, urban and watery places,
yeah,
grasslands, prairies, plateaus, just the whole thing, and understanding how it all coexists and supports other habitats, and it's cool, and it's cool to explore out in your area and with this kind of light, mm-hmm, and kind of cool good weather. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
So I'm hoping to get out there as well, and We'll learn all of the nautical terms. We'll be familiar with waterfowl, I think.
Okay, waterfowl alone is fascinating because we were spending some time on the water and just seeing all the different kinds of waterfowl that passed by. We saw cranes. You know, cranes are these birds that just kind of walk like they're walking on eggshells, literally. They move so slowly and they stand still. They're hunting something in the water. I'm not exactly sure what, but it just looks really dainty and cool, and I could watch that for hours.
Yeah, they tiptoe. It's what I think of when you say the word tiptoe. It's,
yeah.
And the motion, the action is very much like the way a crane moves.
Yeah.
They're really elegant, too, though. They're beautiful creatures.
It's absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. And then you have swans. You
sure.
Know, and they're huge. And sometimes, if you're lucky, you see them fly. I remember we were on Fire Island last year, and we saw a bunch of swans fly by, and that was really an incredible experience. But you can hear them, too, on the water. Their wings, for some reason, flap on the water as they fly.
Oh my gosh, yeah, and it's incredibly dynamic,
yeah.
Very, very loud.
Yeah.
Amazing sound. Yeah, and there's real orchestration. All the voices of birds near the water it's really magical, especially this time of year. It's fun stuff to hear.
Veritable cacophony.
It is a cornucopia.
Oh, you topped me there, okay.
Of audio. And I did some recording, I did some filming over the weekend, and got outside. There's a lot of beautiful flowers coming out, and at different times, but I saw a couple that caught my eye, and I said, oh, I got to get outside. So
yeah.
I was recording, and the sound alone was amazing. And hearing all of the birds, there was a whole bunch of seagulls above, kind of like 15 or 20 of them flying around and just dipping and diving in this like beautiful sunny weather. Very cool to see that behavior. And then a couple birds fighting and flying through sort of a wooded area and out towards the water and seeing them just whiz by. I think I even got a footage of them going right in front of my camera, but I didn't look fast enough to see them fly right in front of me, and I haven't been able to go back and look at it yet. But those kinds of things are so cool to see. It's the little details. It's that emerging
yes.
beauty, and it's really cool in springtime.
And it's the kind of thing that we let pass by all too often. It's around all of us. Sometimes you might have to travel a little bit to see these things, but it's not far. And just yesterday we saw a bunch of geese that were having an argument as they were flying. Actually, two geese were having some kind of argument. They landed and they continued the argument after they landed. And it was like one goose was trying to get the last honk in. And it just went on for about 5 minutes afterwards. You have to wonder what's going on in their world. Because obviously there was an issue while they were flying. They were talking to each other. I assume that's what they were doing. And there's all kinds of other smaller bits of life. We saw a bunch of bees, and bees are amazing. People are afraid of bees. You shouldn't be, because they're essential. And I heard that we lost 42% of the bees last year.
There's a lot of stuff going on with bees right now.
Yeah.
And they've been in the news, and definitely something to watch. Basically, pesticides and a lot of the modern agribusiness is affecting them profoundly.
I have very little patience for people that always see nature as the enemy. You know, you have a bee's nest near your house. Well, you have to destroy it because it might sting you. Well, it hasn't stung.
Children.
It might sting your damn children.
Your
okay.
dog.
You know what? A bee sting every now and then isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. It can be, yeah. That's that one in a thousand person, you know, statistic that, okay, they're going to be allergic to a bee sting. But the point is, you know, kids used to get stung by bees all the time. You learn to live with nature, not just destroy it so that you can live an easier life.
Let them be.
Very good, very good. That should be the slogan of the National Bee Society. But we've discovered little bees' nests in the ground. They look like anthills, but they're actually for solitary bees, ground bees, they call them.
That's true, and yeah. That's something I never knew existed.
I didn't know that either. And they were kind of like buzzing the ground, looking for unfortunate other insects that might be out and about that they could pick off and I don't know, you know, make part of their larder in their homes. But what they do is, in the beginning of the spring, they build these houses, and they look a lot like anthills, except the holes to get into them are bigger. And then they abandon them later in the spring. In fact, they might have left already. And I'm not sure if the ants move in at that point or if they just sort of lie there and get all abandoned. But it's just really amazing to see that little part of nature. And, you know, we've passed by this all the time. We never had a run-in with bees. You know, we give them their space. They give us our space. We had the wasps last year. They were different. They looked similar, but they went into inside a wall of stone. And they made their nest in there. And they only last one season. After the winter, they don't come back. So all sorts of little facts about life.
Yeah, you cannot forget the variation and the personality and the just the breadth of kinds and types and just huge variety in nature. And that's a great thing to appreciate. And I was kind of really caught off guard. That was a surprising thing to learn about. And you got to just appreciate all of them. And then I've seen some really big bumblebees floating around.
Yes.
And that's a great sign, because those, I think, were the pollinators, right? They're the most
Well, the honeybees are the
beneficial
ones that are the most threatened. I'm not sure if honeybees and bumblebees are exactly the same, or I'm always very confused about that. And a wasp is similar to a bee, but different.
They're a bit more, they're less closely related to like ground bees or wasps. They're more like on the pollinating side, I know, but I've seen some really huge bumblebees, so that's a good sign.
And they haven't attacked you?
No, I remember as a kid having bad experiences maybe with bees, but I think that's because I was a kid and maybe I was, you know,
throwing stones at the nest.
Well, or stepping on them, you know, and these kinds of things. You're bound to get a stinger in your foot.
Yeah, they don't like that.
I've had a couple run-ins maybe twice in my life, but I've never been attacked by a swarm or anything like that. And I like to think that I've had a fairly respectful relationship with bees, and you know, we know how to negotiate one another.
Well, it's just a respect for nature in general.
They're part of the fold. Yeah,
I've
definitely
been stung by one bee.
Okay.
It was back when I lived in the Cedars, massive house over in Strong's Neck, one day, I guess the local queen bee decided she was going to move her nest into the fireplace that was in my room in that house. I didn't know what was going on. I just woke up and I just heard this like kind of low-pitched buzzing noise all around. And it was the entire colony of bees that had moved into my fireplace. And I still didn't know what was going on until I was going down the stairs, and I got a sting on my arm as I was walking down the stairs from, I guess, an overzealous worker or something that thought he had to do that. That's it. That's the only bee sting I've ever gotten in my life. We had to light a fire to get the queen to move her nest somewhere else. But that's, you know, that's how you deal with things like that. No pesticides, no exterminators. That's, you know, a little prodding and dealing with nature on its own terms. And you feel so much better doing that. And this goes for vegetation as well as for animal life. You know, we have so much here in Long Island, in New York, and throughout, wherever you happen to be, there's nature all around you. And it can be really a great addition to your life if you embrace it and don't just battle it. And, you know,
especially in a long-term way, not like just being short-sighted or thinking for purely aesthetic reasons and those types of things. We like to control our environment, you know, like Army Corps of Engineers style.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is truth. Truthfully, a lot to be said to just kind of allow some of it to grow and be a steward of it more so and take more a longer view of things' purpose. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely, yes. Again, too many people are just battling it, paving, clear cutting, whatever, seeing animals as threats instead of cohabitants of the land we live in. Hey, you know, we've met Marty, the raccoon, the local raccoon.
Yeah, I think actually it is. It might be Marty's. We may have found one of his hangout spots.
It's a perfect name for a raccoon.
I think Marty, it works.
Because we just see him, like, you know, ambling around, and it's like, it looks like the same. I mean, they all look like raccoons, obviously, but he does the same types of things, you know. And
he keeps similar hours.
Yeah.
I don't know. We kind of see him commuting. Obviously, he's going places and has things to do. Raccoons, all raccoons, as everyone well may imagine, have busy lives.
Well, he knows when garbage night is, when recycling night is.
Absolutely. He has to keep up with the schedule.
But we saw him the other day sleeping in the tree.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I was, again, you know, just soaking up a lot of what there is and the checking in on all the busyness outside. And I glanced over at this one tree and the light was hitting it, you know, and I think my first reaction was a bird or something like that, but it was this really, really kind of fuzzy, faint face that I recognize that is a raccoon.
Yes.
In a tree. Okay, wow.
Way high up,
and
too.
He's really high up, more than halfway up the trunk, just lounging, basically mm-hmm. sunning himself or herself in the tree. And it was really a jaw-dropping experience to be basically eye-to-eye with this animal that is way high up and not even afraid, has no real...
I don't understand how he was able to stay up there. He basically just lying on a branch, and that's good enough. Like, you know, the cat will lie on a cat tree, but this is 10 times the height, and I don't think, you know, the cat would go for that, you know, and lounge about and lie on its back. No, the raccoon seems to have a lot more faith in gravity.
So we'll have to keep everyone updated on our relationship with this this creature, because clearly it's way more than just crossing paths, mm-hmm. and we've actually found out one of his hangouts just by going on a walk. So that's cool.
Well, I'd like to know, where do raccoons actually sleep? I don't think he sleeps in that branch every night. He's got to have like a...
There's knots and stuff in some of the trees we were walking near, and it's like a hole. Uh-huh. And I thought maybe we'd see a bird or an owl or something like that, but maybe they can fit in knots like squirrels live in trees often.
Okay, how is all that decided? Because you have squirrels, you have owls, you have raccoons, you have possums. You know, who gets the hole in the tree? You know, and if somebody goes in there and doesn't realize that, hey, there's an owl in here already, what, is it just a bunch of apologies and they back off? Or is there a fight? How does that work? What are the laws?
I think the owls have rent control.
I don't know.
And squirrels.
Well, nighttime, too. You know, maybe some animals occupy in the daytime, some occupy in the nighttime. They could share, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe they cohabitate. They may have agreements. That was the thing. This kind of meeting of the eyes with mm-hmm. this raccoon made me realize that it also has relationships with creatures that are flying around, the birds we were talking about, squirrels. Obviously, they're going to be running up and down. There's a balance there.
Now, when a raccoon sees a squirrel, do they, you know, is that just a nod of the head as they pass by? Or does one hate the other? Or can one defeat the other in a fight? Do they ever fight? You know?
I'm not sure. I think there's, like, passing rules, obviously, if the raccoon's on their way up the tree and then the squirrel is maybe... attempting to come down, or maybe having an altercation with another squirrel and making chase or something like that, there's going to be some sense that, okay, you guys are going to have to maybe hold off, let me back up or down, and as it is, I don't know, there could be a lot of negotiations there.
Because they fight amongst each other. Squirrels are always fighting amongst each other, so are raccoons. You hear that at night, it sounds demonic.
That's a whole other thing, yeah. I'm familiar with that.
And then there's deer. We have deer all over the place, too. And people are upset about the deer. You know, we've talked about this in the past. Because there's too many of them. Because they're everywhere. Oh, my God. I'm going to have a deer tick.
It's hilarious when people are like, nature is encroaching on our habitats. And it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, they're encroaching because you destroyed where they lived beforehand. Now they have no place else to go.
Really, it's like their numbers are coming back uh-huh. because of being displaced.
Uh-huh.
And they... you know, want to hang out. They want to, like, be in their space and maybe, you know, walk through where they used to live and hang out, you know, and have the run of the roost.
I've had this conversation multiple times with people who don't agree with me, who feel that a deer culling is needed, that you have to hunt the deer, you have to wipe them out or at least cut them down by like 90% or something like that. Why? Because of the threat of the deer tick. And the deer tick can give you Lyme disease. And Lyme disease can cause all kinds of problems. And, you know, by the time you reach the end of the sentence, you're scared to death and you want to kill all the deer. But again, it's the deer tick. It's not the deer that's giving you the disease. And there's a way to prevent the deer tick from latching onto the deer. There are various things you can put in their food. Yeah, you have to feed them. There's a little feeding hole that you can construct. When the deer get there, it does something to dissuade the deer tick from being on them. It's not a hazardous chemical or anything. It's just something that has proven effective, I believe, out in Shelter Island.
Yeah.
So then you have that. Okay. And then, but the people aren't satisfied because, well, you know, yeah, but the deer are still going to eat my flowers. And that's what it's really all about. They don't want the deer eating their flowers. They want to plant flowers that don't even belong here in the first place. And they're upset that the deer are doing what comes naturally to them. You know, the deer tick, that's just a convenient excuse to kill them. But once you solve the deer tick problem, they still want to kill the deer.
Right. I think that, you know, they should not be allowed, I think there's built in, sentiment for the hunting. I mean, the hunting thing is kind of built into that, to being concerned about that, but I don't think you should be a victim. I think, you know, there's ways you can behave when you're outdoors to mitigate your risks to being exposed to things. I don't want to reduce the danger of parasites and hemophages and all these things that are very tiny and can very, very well hurt you or transmit other things, being vectors for things and so on. I mean, I'm very aware of that as a risk, but I don't think we should be paralyzed and just say, well, okay, we need to go and like and just allow all kinds of hunting or this, that, or the other thing. Just it's built in. It seems built in for as a solution. And, you know, there's other places to hunt. And I think that, you know, there should be wildlife that persists. And you know, we too should alter our, behave in ways that make us safe, not, you know, use possible risk as a reason to annihilate generations of stuff that also is enticing for hunting reasons. I mean, I don't know. It seems built in as a bad way. I like the solution you're talking about though, the feeding, and that sounds like an easy way to eliminate the risk and also keep the wildlife
around.
Yeah,
I'm looking it up now. Actually,
I don't know. I get mixed feelings about it.
I think it's called the four poster system, and it was put into place out on Shelter Island. It proved to be effective in that deer tick population went way down, and that's really what you want to do. I found a tick on me today. I didn't tell you this. I actually found a tick. I didn't freak out. I didn't call the police. I didn't do anything. Like, you know, I just basically removed the tick, and that was it.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I've had similar run-ins where you catch them. I caught one in my pant leg because I had been outside and it was rolled up, and I unrolled it, and there it was. I was like, "All right, you're going out before you go any further." There, you know, you just have to deal with it and be aware when you expose yourself. And it's very new to me. I've not been around environments that had this creature and that bug in particular, but I'm aware of it now, and I guess, I don't know, I feel as free as before to walk around and enjoy the nice weather, so that's cool. Anyway, it was interesting going through all these different stories of interactions with stuff and creatures and wildlife and enjoying the outdoors. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on, or are you still?
I'm looking at this four poster because if I'm going to mention something, I should at least back it up with some facts. And what happens is this particular case, the four poster deer treatment bait stations. That's what they put into place. What happens is the deer come up to them. They put their noses to the ground to get the corn that's in there, and one of their ears gets between two rollers. And that's got this pesticide. Now, okay, that kind of makes me concerned because pesticide is something you should always be aware of. But assuming this pesticide is the safe kind, it takes care of the deer tick problem because then they basically spread that around, and deer ticks have a much harder time surviving. So, you know, there's always a solution of one sort or another to these problems. So that's that. Horseshoe crabs too. I want to mention horseshoe crabs.
Yeah, yeah.
They're unique to the area.
They are from outer space. Those are some bizarre creatures.
Yeah, but they always flip themselves over and then they die. So, you know, if you see a horseshoe crab on a beach, please turn it right side up and send it on its way. They belong in the water. They bury themselves in the sand. But, you know, they've been around since the dinosaurs. I don't know how they've been around this long. But they have an unfortunate habit, like turtles, of basically going on their backs and for some reason not being able to turn themselves the right way.
Yeah, I've never seen one walking around. They've always been sort of the remnants of a horseshoe crab. So maybe this spring and summer I'll catch a glimpse of one in action.
Well, I mean, it's not hard to do. They're out now. I know because we see all kinds of carcasses on the beach.
Yeah.
So we just have to go down there when low tide is when they must come out or something. I don't know. We'll figure this out, but we'll get to know some. And hopefully turn them on their right side and send them on their way. They're interesting animals, but there's so many interesting creatures out there that you just have to look for. Turtles in weird places and even snakes. And that's all kinds of fun as well. Okay, you know, speaking of appreciating things, there was something else that we were appreciating this week as well. A lot of appreciation going on. We've been in a project, yet another archiving project. A friend of ours had a bunch of tapes, a bunch of reel-to-reel tapes that she inherited from her family,
mm-hmm.
that were thought almost to be, you know, irretrievable, recordings of old radio programs from the 1970s. We were able to find a reel-to-reel tape machine.
A suitable working, semi-working deck.
Well, you made it fully working by...
It takes a little bit of babying, and I've been going through various lubricating and greasing, and yeah, it's a mechanical device. It's got a lot of moving parts.
Well, what this
I'm learning,
what this resulted in, and you know, this is the thing. I think people need to familiarize themselves not only with the new technology, but with the old technology as well, because you know, much like some kids today might not know how to use a rotary phone, or might not even know what a payphone is. It's very good for you to understand the technology, not just use it. And you get an understanding of technology when you go back and see how things were put together that led to the things that we use today. And the reel-to-reel tape machine, you know, you couldn't get more basic than that. You know, it's one reel on one side, one reel. It's like a massive cassette, I guess, except without the cassette part. Now, the interesting thing about this, and this is something that maybe a lot of people don't know who actually have used reel-to-reel tape machines, you can put two different programs on the tape as you're playing it. In other words, basically left channel, right channel, but you can separate those. There are tape machines that will just play one channel, then you play another channel, and you get about maybe an hour and a half on the entire reel, maybe a little more actually, hour 45 minutes, but multiply that by two because you have two channels. Oh, it gets better. Once you get to the end, you can flip the tape just like a cassette and play it the other way and have two more channels. So that's like, well over 6 hours on and that's at a speed known as 3 3/4. You can go half that speed. So now you're up to over 12 hours on a single reel of tape. It's incredible what you can do. But what we have found on these tapes are recordings from New York radio, and it made me realize how good New York radio, or just basically FM radio in general, used to be. You did not have, I mean, maybe there were some stations like this that weren't recorded, but for the most part, there were a lot of radio stations that just had people doing interviews, playing music, having various dialogue on the air, debates, entertainment programs of sorts. Not a whole lot in the way of commercials, just people who knew the music they were playing and engaged the audience. Basically intelligent, kind of like USB, all right? Imagine...
Oh, very much like USB and other community radio stations, absolutely. And it's a really brilliant time capsule.
Uh-huh.
It's so cool to unearth these treasures of audio and production of broadcast, and who knows who's listening to it? I mean, nobody is, and it feels amazing to relax and the tapes, the reel to reel plays for quite a while.
Oh yeah,
there are different tape speeds. I'm learning a lot of this myself for the first time. And it's really fascinating how much content and how great it sounds for how old it is,
yeah.
And for how long it's been sitting around.
Yeah, and we have had problems. We continue to have problems. Sometimes the tape slows down midway through. Not sure if it's a tape or maybe it's the player. I think it's maybe a combination of the two because they're both old. But when we're able to get it right, we realize we've got something completely unique. We might have the only copy of some of these programs that have aired because... Lots of times people don't record their own material. Lots of times radio stations, they change ownership and they just get rid of everything. So we are encompassing a valuable library that almost got trashed as well. And I just wonder how many other people out there have collections of things like this that are in danger of being destroyed. We need to preserve these things because this is a real time capsule. Being able to go back, and I think this is 1972 we're talking about, being able to go back there and see this is what radio sounded like. Wow, why doesn't it sound like that now? Maybe we should sound like this. There were so many different stations. WNYC wasn't an NPR station then. It was a station that played classical music and folk music and had talk shows.
That's something cool too, the ownership, going back through that history. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a part of the process, part of unearthing and listening.
It was owned by the city of New York. There was WRVR, a station in Queens that played jazz music but had really good announcers and the people knew their music. You had WQXR before they basically destroyed the station by moving it to a frequency few people can get now. It was a station I grew up with, a station a lot of people I know grew up with, a classical station owned by the New York Times. You had WNCN, another classical station in New York City. You had, of course, WBAI, which exists to this day. And that's not even going into the non-commercial part of the band. These are all the stations that were in the commercial part of the FM band. It's just a treasure trove to see what the station sounded like back then. And these things have to be preserved. I looked online. I was trying to find, are there any archives of this material? Could not find any. I found people talking about them, fondly remembering these particular radio shows, but I could not find any actual archive material. So if you have things like this, do not throw them out. Do not throw out archives. Do not throw out audio from the past, because people need to hear this, and people will be fascinated by it. I can guarantee that.
Definitely, and it's keeping us busy, keeping us well busy and entertained. It's it's an interesting diversion, and you're helping out. You're like doing this cool curating of stuff that was otherwise going for the secondhand store or whatever, garbage, you know, which is worse.
Just yesterday, I found myself in the midst of that project. But also, we're preparing the next volume of the Hacker the quarterly the Hacker Digest.
Our Hacker Digest.
I'm trying to figure out what volume we're up to now. We're up to 1990 is the year. I know that much. I lost track of the volume numbers. But I was going through that.
14, right?
No, it's not that high. How could it be? We started in 1984. It would be volume.
No, it'd be 12. 10?
7, I think.
7?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was an historical period, too, because that's when the Operation Sun Devil took place. That's when there were all these raids everywhere. They were trying to crack down. They busted a Hacker newsletter, not us, fortunately.
The genesis of a lot of history.
And that was the year that the Electronic Frontier Foundation formed out of a response to that. So I'm going through that, hearing WRVR playing from 1972 in the background.
Oh, my gosh.
Meanwhile, down the hallway, we have 4 VCRs going, encoding all this 9/11 footage that I also happen to have on tape, 8 hours each, four tapes being recorded at the same time. A whole lot of archiving going on, but it's history. It needs to be preserved, and we need to learn from it.
Gosh, yeah, it's fun stuff. A lot of tape, treasured artifacts.
Yeah, and you'd be
media techs
amazed how easily they disappear.
They do. They do. That 9/11 stuff, gosh, I mean, I was weird because it's very recent to me because it was college and a time when I was very active, very real, you know, formative years. And that was a real pivotal moment for a lot of my growth and understanding of politics, understanding of, society in general and just adult life. Mm-hmm. But it really feels old when I watch the video, yet I was living in a time that I felt was fairly modern, the future, as it were.
But we always have.
And we always feel that way. Yeah. It's just so funny to look back and be like, that really was old. That really was. Like,
I mean, people in the 1950s, you know.
It was 2001. That's crazy.
With their cigarette salads or whatever they ate back then, you know, they would laugh at people from the 1920s. Oh, we're so much more advanced than that. And now look, you know. And I have no doubt that down the road a little bit, people will be laughing at us.
It's funny because a lot of the passions, a lot of the things I toyed with, the little hobbyist things, a lot of those were timeless activities. Mm-hmm. And so I felt my own diversions were sort of just kind of a rehashing kind of things that many people have done, you know, being, you know, into fixing things and repairing stuff. And those were the kinds of things that I did for fun at that time. And I wasn't really paying attention to the kinds of news and media that we were going through. And to look back at stuff now and realize, okay, yeah, I was in a different world doing things that were even older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, appreciating machines, appreciating, you know, how to build something. And it's funny that I was channeling stuff that was even older than the quote, you know, current media of that time that now I'm now going back and having the pleasure of curating and looking at. It's weird, the weird lens you look at it in hindsight.
Well, to me, it's just fascinating to look at these old recordings, in particular the 9/11 recordings, because before that date, watching CNN, for instance, it was radically different. There was no crawl at the bottom of the screen. Then on 9/11, that's when the crawl began. And it was different, too, because they would have, you know, an item, then a bunch of space, then another item, then a bunch of space. And then after that, it just got more and more intrusive.
And
until
fluid.
Yeah.
And yes. Highly programmed.
You just saw how things gradually changed to what they are today. And some for the good, some for the bad. But it was just really... really pivotal moment. And it's good to have those captured. I know other people have that on tape, but it's always good to keep your copy, too, just in case you have something unique. And I'm sure I have unique things, too, because I flipped around different channels and had all sorts of other things recorded as well. Are we going to try to conquer delay again? Last week, it really outsmarted us.
Yes.
Because the whole delay unit failed. But this time, I think we've got it all working. If you bring that up there... Okay, just bring it up. And if you also, that switch there that I'm pointing directly at, down there. Yeah, put that up and then you'll hear better. Okay. We have our phone lines and they're wide open. And we'd like to talk to our listeners. 631-632-6901. You need to also change your headphone monitoring. Okay. And we should be back in about 7 seconds. And then we will take phone calls if there are any phone calls to be taken. 631-632-6901.
Hello, this is Willie Nile. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, you lucky people.
Hey, and we're back.
Yeah, that went very smoothly, didn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm getting it. It's like the fourth time it's really... It's going to sink in one of these times, so hopefully everything came through and... we're ready to take your calls. This is WUSB, the most dangerous station in the nation. And you're listening to Off the Wall, one of the coolest programs you ever did here on a Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Wow.
I dare say.
All right. It takes a lot of daring to say that.
And you can call us if you're on campus. Just dial 26901 or call us 631-632-6901. Hello to anyone and everyone who is on IRC.
Oh, yeah. They're out there, too.
There are people in IRC. There are people that use IRC. It's a great old communications medium.
Internet relay chat.
Check it out.
Yeah. Well, okay. Do we have any calls?
Yeah, we've got two calls coming in.
Let's just take one of them.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and bring up a call here. Hello, you're on WUSB.
Hello, this is Ian here. You say you recorded, you used... VCR tapes for the 9/11 incident?
That's right, yes.
So, I guess because it's 2001 and not today, what reasons were that you didn't use CD-ROMs or anything like that?
Well, it wasn't really easy to record CD-ROM on a TV set back then. It's still kind of... it was just a simple matter to hit record on the VCR.
Yeah, it's so cool. That's a great question. And at the time, going directly to like a digital format, that stuff was still emerging and actually very expensive, all said and done. You could do it back then, I'm sure, but VHS was a great medium. Lots of tapes were around at the time, I gather, and to just buy a ton of those and wiring composite cables to VCR off whatever your input signal is just was the easiest, the thing right at hand.
Did you have any experience recording on CD-ROM? Because I've never done that.
No, sir. I'm practically a dummy when it comes to technology most of the time. I'm not the best of it.
People say that, but you know what? Everybody's a dummy in something. As long as you're open to learning, then there's nothing you can't do.
True. I guess, is it kind of like similar to like burning something, like burning a CD into the CD-ROM, or...
If you were going to try to put something on optical media these days, I would gather you would take something that takes a composite video signal, run it into some kind of digital encoder that is connected to a machine, and then take that encoded file on the machine and export it or otherwise burn it or author it, rather, to a Blu-ray or a DVD. Yes, I believe you could do that. But
you see why I used a VCR where I could just hit the record button. It was a lot simpler.
Yeah, a lot of that. It was a lot of doing back then.
Yeah, I remember my father used to like record a lot of shows with the VHS tape and blank tapes.
Yeah,
it's truly a cheap and economical medium to just do tons of hours of it. Maybe not as good a quality, but to have it at all, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, the thing is, I would record everything. I record the commercials, I record the breaks. A lot of people stop it and just record the program. I think that's a mistake because years later, the commercials and all the little technical things that go on, that's the most interesting part. Programs you can get on DVD, so there's no real point. But having the various local cut-ins... that's the unique stuff that probably the stations don't even have anymore.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Welcome. Have a good night.
Okay, and we've got one more call here. Hey, you're on Off the Wall.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, Long Island Radio, sometimes off the hook, sometimes off the wall, sometimes unnameable. Lord bless us.
Wow, was that a Bob Fass-like reference?
Oh, sure.
You know, it's amazing you say that because I just heard Bob Fass from 1972 on one of those reel-to-reel tapes.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Listen, I'm calling for a reason. I've been calling. I'm the one that's been calling and hanging up because, you know, my cable package will hang me up.
Uh-huh.
Talked about the deer tick thing.
Uh-huh.
I have a friend I went to school with, and she was a nurse all these years, actually in Southampton now, but... she has a problem with Lyme disease, but there's something more to it that is now, she's saying it's called neuro-Lyme. So I looked it up.
Okay.
She said there's a documentary, so I looked at that. Let me tell you. So what it's called is Under Our Skin, and it's really deep. So there's a scientist in Smithtown, which is also our territory, right, guys? Right?
Uh-huh.
You used to talk it, crew?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm out to talk it all the time to the doctors in Stony Brook Hospital.
Mm-hmm,
I'm
mm-hmm.
in good shape, though. Anyway,
good to hear.
One of the guys doing heavy research. He's got his own little histology or something lab.
Okay.
But they also go into how insurance has read this and is trying to dodge the whole thing. You know, if they change a letter or something on the diagnosis, it becomes different type of thing, like ADD is ADHD, da-da-da-da-da.
Ah, okay.
It's a very serious thing, and it messes with your mind. So then it turned into, he got slices from the National Institutes of Health of Alzheimer's brains, and he's finding neuro-Lyme in all of them, and Parkinson's and others. So the documentary on, what is it, YouTube, is Under Our Skin.
Got it. All right, so some of this stuff may be founded as
but, you know, it's also can become a tool to start to see if people can do something about it like they're trying to do. And they also explain how it becomes competitive with different camps and on and on, and that's the documentary.
Okay, that sounds interesting. It's definitely worth looking into, and there are solutions that you can find in diseases that will lead to cures for either that disease or other diseases. So it's important to study them.
And certainly awareness and vigilance are...
BAI, Dr. Ali, his work is tremendous. I recommend it to everybody. But he also knows how to debunk things like this and get people past it. So really, I really recommend that documentary. Not only that, I'm a reel-to-reel guy from, like, the 70s.
You know, let me ask you something else. You're also a landline. You're calling us on a landline now, aren't you?
At a Cablevision.
Okay, it sounds really good compared to a cell phone. I heard cars passing by, and that's like, you know, can't
hear.
Out
in the driveway and the cordless.
Uh-huh. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Tell us about your reels.
I'm sorry?
Your reel-to-reel experience, real quick.
I've had them over the years, and I used to take, I remember now, Fripp and Eno used to take a reel-to-reel, or two of them, or something, yeah, two of them, and put it, the same tape running from one machine to the other, and they'd play something into it, and then it would go to the next machine and play, and then they would play back what they just recorded, I don't know, maybe 7 inches across the table?
Yeah, we did that at USB a few times, and we had it running across the room.
Like in electronics, or it's just a raw form of it. I don't know the deep electronics.
I think you guys
might know the phase lock loop thing.
That's how Space Echo worked, I think, too, as
an
effect.
Yeah, but when I went to college, we smoked this and we drank that and we played the blues, and I would hook up. I had two reel-to-reels and a Nakamichi cassette deck.
Wow.
And hook different in and out, in the front, out the back, back and forth. And put a couple tracks in like you guys are talking about. I could multi-track and get the guitar here and the voice here and the keyboard here and there, and you know, just old school with very little money and the tools I had, instead of a fancy mixing anything, and I used it as a mixer.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of fun. Hey, we gotta go, so thanks for your call.
Great show, great stuff, thanks guys.
Alright, cool, we'll talk to you again.
Yes, try to resurrect or keep or give away or something those old machines.
Definitely. Alright, hey, we gotta run. Have a good night. All right. Hey, that's so fun. I love talking about that stuff. And I haven't had a lot of exposure to this kind of, you know, being able to put it on for a long time and just how it all works. I never thought I'd be as exposed to this. I had a couple opportunities to work with professional video decks, and I helped with some of the archiving stuff, getting decks and professional stuff for videotape. But never really. I was just towards the edge when they were switching and teaching kids the DAW, the DAW. That is a digital audio workstation. All hard drives, all digital. And so I didn't get as much opportunity. But since it's being phased out, since we don't use the magnetoscope anymore, it's really cheap and accessible. So have fun, play around with audio, use some old recording devices. Back to the real world. So we'll come out of delay.
We're
back.
This
is off the
same thing
wall.
Every time. All right, talked over yourself and cut off the signal. That's okay. No, at least went into delay.
It
nice
can't
and smoothly.
Always be really perfect, but. It's been a heck of a good time, and there's so much other stuff we'd love to talk about, but we have to run, so I'm going to...
Can I just say quickly?
Play the music. Yeah, go ahead. What?
This is a song that I heard on one of those reel-to-reel tapes that I didn't know about before, from Leonard Cohen, 1972, making reference to Scientology and going clear and all that. It really is awesome that we're being turned on to new music. That's old.
All right. Good night, everyone.
It's 4 in the morning, the end of December. I'm writing you now just to see if you're better. New York is cold, but I like where I'm living. There's music on Clinton Street all through the evening. I hear that you're building your little house deep in the desert. You're living for nothing now. I hope you're keeping some kind of record. Yes, and Jane came by with a lock of your hair. She said that you gave it to her that night that you planned to go clear. did you ever go clear? Oh, the last time we saw you, you looked so much older. Your famous blue raincoat was torn at the shoulder. You'd been to the station to meet every train then. You came home without Lily Marlene, and you treated my woman to a flake of your life. When she came back, she was nobody's wife. Well, I see you there with a rose in your teeth. One more thin gypsy thief. Well, I see Jane's away. She sends her regards. And what can I tell you, my brother, my killer? What can I possibly say? I guess that I miss you. I guess I forgive you. I'm glad you stood in my way. If you ever come by here, for Jane or for me, well, your enemy is sleeping, and his woman is free. Yes, and thanks for the trouble you took from her eyes. I thought it was there for good, so I never tried. By with a lock of your hair, she said that you gave it to her that night that you planned to go clear. Sincerely, L. Cohen.
Yeah, kids, this is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution until the 9 p.m. hour. I am featuring tonight the birthdays of both Joey Ramone, one of my heroes musically, and Mr. Pete Townsend, and the Mod Father himself. And if you have any requests, you can give us a call at 631-632-6901. We're going to be covering a lot of ground tonight. So, yeah, we're going to start off our multiple birthday celebrations tonight on Finn's Revolution with Sheena is a punk rocker for Joey Ramone's birthday, going out by multiple requests. And, yeah, let's do it, and let's rock on till 9 p.m. Turn it up, baby, turn it up. They're ready to go now.
Yeah. Takes me to you.
Chicago!